This is Joe Burns.
And Chad P.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Rock School Podcast.
We think you'll learn something.
Now remember, if you want to hear the show with all the music in place, go to KSLU.org and stream the show live, Thursdays at 5.
And Sundays at 4.
It's a new show every week.
Now enjoy this week's Rock School Radio Show.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
It's time for school. Rock School. With your hosts, Dr. Joe Burns. Yes.
Rock and roll music would not have been rock and roll music without the technological aspect, the invention of the 45, or the donut, as RCA called it when they were working on it.
And Chad P.
I wonder if the stuff that we're listening to nowadays, the new stuff, like the new Linkin Park and bands like that, will be considered early influences, like after you and I are gone.
Class is in.
Well, they punched a hole in the side of us and filled us with cement.
That's right. Our Rock School Radio Show is officially declared dead.
That's right. We're no longer spewing and gushing facts from the floor of
Wait, we are.
Yeah, that's right. That's too bad. Hey, last week we talked about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Sidemen.
Yes.
Right. And we were actually able to get through everybody who was in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a sideman. Small little grouping of people.
Mm-hmm.
This week, we're going to talk about early influences, and I was really hoping that the Rock Hall would get around to announcing their nominees, but by the time we're recording this, they haven't done it yet. I expect it this week.
You mean you didn't send a letter?
Well, a strongly worded
worded letter.
That's right. Now, it's going to happen sometime this week. Folks, we record this show on Mondays, and it airs on Thursdays.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're saying this on a Thursday, and you've seen the commercial or the, what is it, the news story that says the nominees for the Rock Hall are, and we sound like idiots.
Yeah.
Well, we are, but not in this case. We just simply recorded the show too early.
Right. At this point, we don't know we're idiots yet.
That's right. But soon we will be found out.
Mm-hmm.
The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has, as I said, two smaller categories called Sidemen and Early Influences. And since soon they will announce who has a chance to go in 2011, I thought last week we'll do Sidemen. This week, we will do Early Influences.
Now, last week we talked about how you get nominated to go in,
right.
And what we talked about was you have to, there has to be 25 years past the time that you put out your first album.
Or recording. Right.
Early Influences, I would think, is a whole different subject.
Right. It has to do with the concept of history and what this person did to influence where rock and roll has become. So many people believe that history began when they came out of the womb.
Yeah.
And I believed that for the longest time. I was of the opinion that if it's not rock that I like, it's bad. You know, if it's not something that I dug, and if I'm not into it, it's terrible. And there's a lot of people that are like that with their music. But as you get older, you start to look around and go, where did this come from?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where these early influence people are. Now, I'm going to talk about rock and roll, the history of rock and roll, and how I think rock and roll came together.
Yeah.
And why every one of these people has a place, a true place, in the history of rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
Let's begin with the first person. This guy went in 1987, Louis Jordan and the Timpani Five. Now, his nickname is the father of rhythm and blues or the godfather of rock and roll, but I gotta tell you, many people believe he has the first rock and roll song ever with Saturday Night Fish Fry.
What?
The song's called Saturday Night Fish Fry, and we're from the Crescent City.
Yeah.
So listen to the lyrics. You're gonna hear places like Rampart Street denoted and all of that.
Yeah.
Why? Why do people dig this guy? Why does he have a shot? It is believed Louis Jordan was the first guy to come up with the prototypical rock band. He took a 16-piece orchestra, knocked it down to 9, and then finally came up with what he considered the band, what a band should be. Guitar, bass, drums, piano, horn, and then he played sax. So for the first time, you really had this little tiny pumping machine putting out traveling music, putting out rock and roll type music, and it sounded like this. Saturday Night Fish Fry, 1987's early influence, Louis Jordan, right here, Rock School.
Now, if you ever been down to New Orleans, then you can understand just what I mean. Now, all through the week, it's quiet as a mouse, but on Saturday night, they go from house to house. You don't have to pay the usual admission.
Hey, I have a sudden urge to eat some fish.
Yeah, the Saturday Night Fish Fry.
Cool, cool song. So he basically created the lineup. So
that's what people say. Anytime somebody says this is the first when they're talking about history, mm-hmm. you have to take it with a grain of salt.
Sure, sure.
Was nobody else playing in little threesomes, quartets, quintets? Well, of course they were.
Of course they were.
But it's the question of what kind of music were they playing.
Right, right, right.
So when you're dealing with these early influences, you're dealing really before the world of rock and roll, mm-hmm. as we call it, I'm making finger quotes here,
yeah.
began.
Okay.
So when you're dealing with rock and roll, you have to kind of say, okay, when did rock begin? Some people say 1955 with Rock Around the Clock.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's well before that. Mm-hmm. I think it's closer to around 1945, 1946, 1947. Somewhere in there is when the musical structure existed.
Well, you can hear influences in songs dating back to the late 30s.
Sure.
You can pull it out if you want to. You know, you hear what you want to.
Oh, I don't think so. I think it's definitely in there. And as we go on, I'm going to start talking about how I think rock and roll is built from six different streams of music coming together.
Yeah.
And the reason why I think these people are in here is because they were part or they were leaders in these streams of music.
Okay.
And I think there's also, outside of the streams of music, a technology side mm-hmm. to rock and roll.
Okay.
Which is why some of these people are in here.
Gotcha. Early influences, I was under the impression that maybe you get the nomination because someone cited in an interview, who is your influence? Oh, we were, you know, like say, for example, Kurt Cobain.
Yeah.
When they interviewed him when he was alive. Hey, who influenced you to get this sound? Or who was your early influence? We were influenced by, I really liked the
Melvins.
Beatles. The Melvins.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, he cited the Melvins. Let's go ahead and indicate the Melvins, and they're a nominee for early influence.
Well, that makes sense to a point, but the problem is none of the people who are on here are of that generation.
Mm-hmm.
They're all way before rock and roll, quote, rock and roll began.
Right.
They're very early people. People like Professor Longhair, Dinah Washington, Howlin' Wolf, mm-hmm. things like that. They're way back in there. Let's talk about 1992's nominee, I guess you would call him, Elmore James. He was a bluesman, and he had a hit with a song by Robert Johnson called Dust My Broom. Problem is, he may have written it. Nobody's quite sure if Robert Johnson wrote it or Elmore James wrote it.
Oh, here we go again.
I think Johnson wrote it.
Same problem last week.
Yeah, I think Johnson wrote it, but some people say Elmore James wrote it. Okay, why? Why is he early on? There's a point at which blues becomes rock, which performance turns it from blues to rock. This guy Elmore James played with a slide.
Yeah.
You don't hear it a lot in this song, but listen to his performance. It's not quite blues. It goes somewhere else. And that somewhere else isn't rockabilly because there's no country in there yet.
Yeah.
So it's not rock and roll, but you can hear it. It's going towards the Zeppelins. It's going toward the Who's. It's going towards the Van Halens.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to the performance. It's rock. Here's Elmore James. I believe I'll dust my broom. Rock School. I believe I'll dust my broom. Elmore James right here on Rock School, one of the early influences of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I don't even want to try to sit back and think about what he's talking about.
Well,
I'm too young.
Yeah, you are. You're right. A young man.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I talked about what musics I thought came together to make rock and roll. If you remember in our New Orleans show, I talked about how well jazz plays into it.
Yeah.
I don't think jazz was a dominant form of music that made rock and roll. But I think jazz played a dramatic part in the coming together of musics to create rock and roll. And what I think jazz gave over to rock and roll was what was known as a boogie-woogie beat.
I know that.
You've heard the concept of he plays eight to the bar. You've heard the boogie-woogie bugle boy. He plays at eight to the bar. What that means is in every measure of music, there are eight notes.
Yes.
And what most people know of is dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum. Those two sets make eight. You've heard of 16-bar blues. You simply play that eight-note set 16 times, and you get 16-bar blues. That's really a boogie-woogie beat. Now, where boogie-woogie came from, again, people back and forth, did it come from here, did it come from there? Some people think the term came from a blues musician named Blind Lemon Jefferson, who referred to the term booger-rugger, which he referred to, he used it to refer to a party. You went to something called a booger-rugger, and he had a certain kind of jump in his playing, and that turned into boogie-woogie. Maybe yes, maybe no. Some people say it was a French term that got, you know, turned around and turned into boogie-woogie. Either way, in 1986, a guy by the name of Jimmy Yancey went as an early player, early influence. His left hand was known as the Yancey bass. And people tried to copy it like crazy. And if you listen to it, you're going to hear some of the earliest boogie-woogie beat. And that boogie-woogie beat was one of the things that really defined early rock and roll. And in my opinion, that's the reason Jimmy Yancey goes in. So here comes some Bauhaus boogie-woogie piano from one of the earliest guys, Jimmy Yancey, one of the members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame from early influences. This is the Midnight Stomp right here, Rock School. Jimmy Yancey.
Dude's fast,
that's
man.
That's foot stomping music, isn't it?
Wow.
But it's that bass. It's the boogie-woogie bass, which you will hear move over to guitar very soon. Some people think that the boogeyman did it. John Lee Hooker made the jump over, too. Some people think it was other people, but a lot of people jump to the song Boogie Chillin' by John Lee Hooker to say that was the jump that occurred. Now, that was jazz. There is also something, there are dominant music forms, there are secondary music forms, I think, that formed rock and roll. One of the dominant music forms was at the time, in the 1940s, called country pop.
Country pop
country
in the 40s?
Pop. Oh, yeah. By all means, yeah. And there was one guy that really took this concept of making stringed instruments, handheld stringed instruments, lead instruments. Country pop basically had to give to rock and roll two things, major melody lines and stringed instruments becoming dominant. Like people say rock and roll is a guitar-based music.
Yeah.
Why? In my opinion, it's because of country pop. And when country musicians played, what did they play? Banjos, mandolins, guitars,
stand-up
bass, stringed instruments.
Well, if the guitar became the lead instrument, what would you have considered a lead instrument before that? A horn?
Oh, yeah, by all means. The reason was amplification, because what instrument had the ability to fill a dance hall?
A horn.
Trombone, saxophone, trumpets, and pianos and other instruments like that either had to be by themselves, or they had to be rhythm instruments.
Right,
just keep a rhythm behind these horns.
Sure.
And that's what you hear out of Benny Goodman and such. And we're going to talk about the first guy in a little bit to actually take the guitar and turn it into, you know, a one-string sting, you know, the guy to be able to play. But this guy went in 1997 into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as an early influence, and you know how much I love bluegrass.
Yes,
it's something
I
don't admit just to everybody, except I just did it on the radio.
On a syndicated radio station.
And you can see the connection all the way through Elvis Presley and Blue Moon of Kentucky. Hey, Bill Monroe had more to give to rock and roll than you can believe. All these guys today that are playing a mile a minute and doing all that two-hand stuff and all of that. Where do you think the concept of stringed instruments as lead came from? It came from country. It came from what they called at the time rural music. And bluegrass was the thing that gave it, which is why he's in there. And here you go. Here's Bill Monroe, Rawhide. You think they play fast today? You think today they're speed demons? Dig this. Rock School. Airspeed for you.
Wow.
Bill Monroe, the Bluegrass Boys, and Rawhide.
Shout out to our good buddy David Perricone on the Bluegrass Hour right here on KSLU. I bet he likes that song.
He does. In fact, he plays a lot of Bill Monroe on that show. Nice guy, Dave Perricone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I promised you I would play the guy who basically is credited with taking the guitar and moving it from a rhythm instrument to the one-string sting, as we like to call it,
in the biz.
Liking to take it to being played as a one-string technique, a one-string instrument, playing leads, basically, on the guitar. You couldn't do it till it was amplified, and Gibson amplified it, not through Les Paul, but a different way. Hello there, people across the people across the pond. I have to get out of that because I will go forever if given the opportunity. Hello, Radio Universidad Salamanca, Spain. Thanks for running the radio show.
Hello, KSCL in Shreveport, Louisiana, where nearly all of the early influences were born and raised.
Good
you
Lord.
Know that?
No, I didn't. You'd think I'd have caught that somewhere in my research.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We also want to get you on Facebook. Go on there and search Rock School Radio Show, those four words, and you'll find us. Sign up. Tell us you like us. You really like us.
Right. You know what's fun about Facebook? We're both admins on the Facebook page, so we have to establish identity. We start arguing and be like, I don't think that. I, Chad. I don't think that.
That's right. Back in a minute. Rock School. This is Rock School as we do early influences through the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We expect to hear sometime this week about who's going to get the nominations. We're recording the show on a Monday, so if they announce it and then you hear the show, just remember we recorded it on a Monday.
I wonder if the stuff that we're listening to nowadays, the new stuff, like the new Linkin Park and Tool and bands like that, will be considered early influences. I mean, way, way down, you know.
70 years in the future.
A long time, like after you and I are gone.
Probably,
like that,
because music has to move forward. You can't just have a boom, and this is where it starts. Think about it. I mean, oldie stations right now, what are they spinning? They can't all be 50s. They have to have moved into the 60s. Think about rap music. We talked about that last week. Sooner or later, there's going to be a rap oldies station.
Sure.
Rap started in the 70s. What are we, 35, 37 years back?
Yes, sir.
From the first rap hits?
It's the same concept that we talked about off mic one time about history. Like, at what point do you start incorporating all the things that are happening today in a history class? Pretty soon, I have the opinion that history is just going to be too much for you to learn in a single semester. You're going to need two or three so you can cover all of it.
You have to chop somewhere.
Yeah.
I said I was going to talk about the guy that took the guitar from a rhythm instrument up to a single string. I also said that there has to be a technological aspect to rock and roll.
Well, this you said that. You said that.
Well, there has to be, because in order to defeat the horns, the guitar had to be amplified.
Well, obviously.
Now, don't run and say, well, Les Paul invented the electric guitar. He did not. It was invented long before him by a guy named Beauchamp, working for, I think, the Rickenbacker Company. However, long before the solid body guitar, the Les Paul, Gibson was putting out hollow body instruments with single lipstick pickups in them. Mm. Problem is, if you turn them up too loud, they fed back, so you had this kind of play back and forth.
Then stop fooling with it.
A guy named Charlie Christian went into the Rock Hall of Fame in 1990 and was really the first lead guitarist.
Mm.
I mean, really good. Single string technique, they call it. And he was the guy that influenced T-Bone Walker, that just went on to later disciples like B.B. King, Chuck Berry, blah, 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 blah. But if you're looking for the first guy that took the first electric guitar and said, I'm tired of being rhythm, I'm going to play lead with this thing, Charlie Christian. And this is one called Solo Flight from him. So this is what it sounded like way back when. He went into the Rock Hall in 1990. This is what he sounded like. Rock School. Charlie Christian taking us to the bottom of the hour, playing the one-string technique on that guitar. First to really take it to a lead instrument. Welcome. We're going to take a quick break from talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's early influences and do something for you called 7 Days in 70 Seconds, September 20th, Monday through September 26th, Sunday. And by the way, this week, Friday, is my 22nd wedding anniversary.
Congrats to you!
In case you're wondering, it's copper. I have no idea what to buy my wife that's copper.
Oh, that's what Emily Post says you have to buy?
Yeah, copper.
Yeah, you have that book, too.
Copper.
A penny.
Oh, good.
How about that?
I wonder how much that is. Here we go. 7 days, 70 seconds. Chad's got Monday. Go.
September 20th, 1975 on Saturday Night Live, the Bay City Rollers make their US TV debut.
Oh, please don't edit that. Please leave that in. Don't edit
performing
that.
Performing Saturday night.
Oh,
go.
Please leave that in.
Shut up.
Tuesday, September 21st, 30 years ago, Elton John leaves longtime record label MCA, starts up with Geffen.
September 22nd, 1965, Roger Daltrey and Keith Moon of The Who get into a fist fight while touring in Scandinavia, and Daltrey was actually temporarily kicked out of the band.
Not too long. 40 years ago, 1970, Thursday, September 23rd, singer-songwriter Annie DeFranco, who is great, by the way, is born in Buffalo, New York.
September 24th, 1995, UK alternative rock band The Charltons are greeted by a group of police officers when their plane lands in New York and they're charged with disorderly conduct on the flight.
Yeah. 30 years ago, Saturday, September 25th, John Bonham, Led Zeppelin drummer, dies from an alcohol overdose at age 32 in Windsor, England. And then Sunday, September 26th, 35 years ago, the cult movie Rocky Horror Picture Show makes its debut.
Don't you laugh at me.
I won't. Getting back to the early influences through the Rock Hall of Fame, I talked about all of these different kinds of music that made up rock and roll music.
What else you got?
I'm of the opinion gospel was a secondary source music that made up rock and roll.
Give me your definitions of dominant musics and secondary musics.
Dominant music, what they called rhythm and blues,
right,
or what back then was called race music,
mm-hmm,
which is why they changed the name to rhythm and blues. You
right
can hear why it wasn't. Country pop, and then what they called white pop or Tin Pan Alley type,
yeah, all right,
stuff.
All right.
The secondary musics are jazz, gospel, and folk because they don't have as much input into it. And then finally, I think there's a technological aspect.
Really? Gospel is a secondary?
Oh, I do. I do think it is.
Explain.
And the reason it's secondary is because what it gave over wasn't music per se. The music base of rock and roll is from blues, or what they called rhythm and blues.
Mm.
It is the 1-4-5 chord progression, and that's where it mainly comes from. And country pop had more to give to it. What gospel gave to rock and roll is the fact that rock and roll is a much more vocal-based music.
Yeah.
The term rock and roll came from the world of gospel music, the world of religious music.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't hear as much gospel in rock and roll as you do blues in rock and roll.
Correct. Yeah.
Right. So for that, the gospel area of rock and roll, that's why I think this group went in, the Soul Stirrers. Now, you may not know the Soul Stirrers, but I'll bet you know their lead singer, Sam Cooke.
I sure do know Sam Cooke.
Sam Cooke. This is really one of the first groups to take the sort of Jubilee singing, the sort of in-church Jubilee singing, and move it to a more rhythmic, more R&B style. And sounds like this. It's just beautiful. One of the forefathers of the development of rhythm and blues. This is called Touch the Hem of His Garment. Sam Cooke out front of the Soul Stirrers right here, Rock School.
Oh, there was a woman in the Bible. She had been sick, sick so very long. But she heard my Jesus was passing by. I'll be made whole right now.
Welcome to the Rock School Radio Show, where we never make any mistakes.
No.
We're going to talk about one more guy here, a few more guys. This person went in 1988. Woody Guthrie. They call him the Dust Bowl Troubadour. Now, I just talked about all of the different musics, I think,
mm-hmm,
that make up rock and roll.
Yeah.
We haven't done anybody for folk. Now, why folk?
I thought folk would be more of a dominant one. I mean,
oh,
folk
no
almost sounds like rock and roll, except with the volume turned a little down.
Well, David Lee Roth actually says rock and roll is nothing but high-octane folk music.
I happen to agree.
Okay. See, I look at rock and roll differently than a lot of people do. I look at rock and roll as a musical form. So I look at the music first.
Mm-hmm.
I look at the chordal structures. I look at the melody line and
yeah
how it looks on the paper,
right,
and such. And the performance, to me, is a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people that believe the performance is rock and roll.
I'm following you. Break
without
it,
the performance, it's nothing.
You break it down into more little categories.
That's
and such,
what I
and
do.
Look a little deeper into it.
That's
I can
it's
respect
probably
that.
Because I'm OCD, but that's
well,
the reason
you're a musician.
I do it.
You're a guitarist, and
there you go.
That's what we do.
And like we've said 1,000 times, you ask me what I think, I'll give you an answer. You ask that guy over there, he'll give you an answer. You ask that guy over there, I just happen to have a radio show. That's the difference between me and that guy over there.
Sure, sure.
Now, folk. Why do I think folk has an influence in rock and roll? A, you can hear it. And B, I think it's mainly for the concept of writing about social change. Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen. I mean, name however many people have written songs, protest songs. I'm upset about this.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That kind of thing.
Get a whole show on that.
Sure. And I think that's why folk has such a place in the history of rock and roll. This guy, Woody Guthrie, without him, there would have been no, as I said, Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen, and probably up through Kurt Cobain, because he had a whole lot of, mm-hmm. he listened to Lithium,
yeah.
and it's that whole thing, and what's it, Heart-Shaped Box, where he says, hey, wait, I've got a new complaint, mm-hmm. so in debt to your priceless advice,
yeah.
you know, that kind of thing. I think that Woody Guthrie is a fantastic representative of the folk section, because This Land Is Your Land, Ain't Got No Home, Dust Bowl Refugees, really did write against the things that he looked around and said, this is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got one for you from him. Here's Woody, Jackhammer Blues, Rock School.
I'm Jackhammer Man from the Jackhammer Town, born with a jackhammer in my hand.
Okay, we just finished up with Woody Guthrie. You know who else is on here? Pete Seeger. Pete Seeger went in as a early influence in 1996. He also would be in there for the folk tradition.
In your opinion, what is the greatest dominant piece of music? The blues, right?
No, blues and country are equal.
They're equal?
Too easily. Rock and roll is too easily dismissed as a music that's the coming together of blues and country. Whereas that's not true. There was this thing called rhythm and blues, which came together with blues music, minor chord music, 1-4-5 chord progression, and then major pop melodies over top.
Yeah.
Kind of this stuff being pushed together. The problem is then you have the rhythm of the music, then you have the performance aspect over top of it, then you have what people are writing about. And things like that. To just say it's these two musics coming together, and furthermore, country at that time had multiple types of music inside of it. Like
yeah.
I said, you had the rural music, you had what they called country pop at the time, you had kind of a boogie-woogie type stuff, you
yeah.
had the stuff in the late 1930s that was trying to equal the rock and roll that people were screaming about.
Right.
And then inside of the rhythm and blues, you had stuff like the Orioles, Barbara Lee, and you had stuff like the Ink Spots, which was so calm, and then you had stuff like Muddy Waters, and then you had screaming stuff like Lead Belly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's too simplistic to say it's these two musics that came together, I think, at least.
Okay.
And again, I'm the guy that has the radio show. Hello, KLSU on the campus over there. How are things at Tiger Radio?
Hello, WBSD in Burlington, Wisconsin. Shout out, Terry. How you doing, man? Thanks for being part of the Rock School Radio Network.
All right, when we come back, we're going to go back to the jazz and what a lot of people believe is the first rock and roll record. Why? Because it's the first one that you can point to that has boogie-woogie beat, has a saxophone solo, 1-4-5 chord progression, and the major on top of it. And it is early, like early 1940s. All righty, coming out, Rock School. Okay, told you coming out of the break, I would talk about one more person in the jazz era
yeah.
as we talk about the early influences on those who are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. This is Nat King Cole.
Cool deal.
Now, what a lot of people know Nat King Cole for is either Route 66, mm-hmm. which gets played a lot in movies, or that secondary piece of editing that people did that was he and his daughter, Natalie Cole, singing Unforgettable.
Oh, yeah.
Some people also might know Lazy, Hazy, Crazy Days of Summer, Ramblin' Rose.
He did Mona Lisa, too, right?
He did. Mona Lisa, you're right. He also had a show, sort of a variety show, in the 1950s. What a lot of people don't know about Nat King Cole is that in the world of rock and roll, he is seen as one of the earliest jazz influences, specifically on piano. There is an album, and it's a four-album set, called Jazz at the Philharmonic.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who owns it? Me. And I was able to find one of these things on eBay, and it didn't cost me a little bit of money either.
Dang.
Les Paul plays on guitar on the thing. People no less than Count Basie looked at this and said, that's a new form of music. This little trio basically could read each other's minds, and they created a song called Blues Part 2 that people believe might be the first rock and roll song. I don't.
No.
Because it's an instrumental,
mm-hmm.
and I am truly of the opinion, without vocals, rock and roll would not have gotten started.
Mm-hmm.
It needs the teenage angst. It needs the scream. It needs, you know, somebody yelling, rock me! It needs that. And I don't think it is. But because of that, I think that's why Nat King Cole went in. And here is Nat King Cole. Straighten up, fly right, and you can hear the great jazz in behind that. Rock School.
A buzzer took a monkey for a ride in the air. The monkey thought that everything was on the square. The buzzer tried to throw the monkey off of his back, but the monkey grabbed his neck and said, now listen, Jack, straighten up and fly right.
You know, I never thought that I would ask you this question, but
What's that?
Made reference a while ago to your anniversary, which made me think of your wife.
Stop
Chill.
Thinking about my wife.
Chill out. So I'm going to play devil's advocate here for
all
a
right.
second. We've done all these.
I know where you're going.
Yeah, yeah. Where are
Go
the
ahead.
Women, man?
Yeah.
Got all these
second.
Guys, all these early influences. You can't tell me that there
yeah.
aren't a few ladies in there.
There is a few. There's a few.
Okay.
Yeah, Billie Holiday is in here. I know there's Bessie Smith
mm-hmm.
is in here, the Empress of the Blues. And I brought one to play. In 2009, last year, the first lady of rockabilly went in, Wanda Jackson.
Who's Wanda
ever heard
Jackson?
Okay, I was hoping you hadn't heard. That way I get to sit here and talk about how much I know about Wanda Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Wanda Jackson was a country singer. One of those where they, you know, put her in a one of those really bad, you know, stereotypical country tops with all the fringe and tied the ascot around her neck with the hat kicked sideways. Wanda got tired of that and decided she could sing rock and roll just like any guy
okay.
could sing rock and roll. Now, when a guy growls his throat, you know, it goes like that.
I know how a growl works.
Could a woman growl her throat?
I'm guessing the answer is going to be yes.
Wanda growled her throat. As a matter of fact, had a bunch of hits. She covered an Elvis Presley song, Let's Have a Party, and then actually toured with Elvis Presley, and some say dated him.
What?
For a little while. Huh? How about that? Got tired of it.
Tired of Elvis?
And well, tired of rock and roll, uh-huh. and found the Lord, and decided to go out and sing gospel.
Mm.
And didn't work for her. Didn't work for her. In 1980, started performing again. And you can actually hear some of her music in, believe it or not, Entourage.
Mm-hmm.
She's actually performing some in the United States, but mainly overseas. So here you go. One of the first women to try rock and roll. And you think, you know, she's not going to growl when she sings, is she? Oh, yeah. You ready for this?
Cool deal.
Wanda Jackson, Let's Have a Party. Rock's cool.
Some people like to rock, some people like to roll, but moving and a grooving's going to satisfy my soul. Let's have a party.
Okay, 8 minutes left in the show, and I want to get two more songs in, so I'm going to do this quick. In 1988, Lester Paulson went in.
Who?
Les Paul.
Oh.
Les Paul went in. Why is he in? Yes, great guitarist. Yes, lots of hits with his wife, Mary Ford. But remember me saying that rock has a technological aspect?
Yes.
Rock and roll music would not have been rock and roll music without the technological aspect. The invention of the 45, or the donut, as RCA called it when
yeah.
they were working on
right,
it.
Right, right.
Same thing here with Les Paul. Solid body electric guitar. Did he invent it? Maybe, maybe not. Some say yes, some say no. But it's safe to say that without him, rock would never have sounded like rock. He created engineering practices such as close miking,
mm-hmm.
echo,
mm-hmm.
delay, overdubbing, multi-tracking, blah, 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 and all these different things you could do. Tape delays, all these things that you do today and don't even think twice about, he came up with them. The song we're going to play is How High the Moon. It has what a lot of people believe is the first rock and roll guitar solo. It isn't. But what a lot of people believe is the first rock and roll guitar solo. But listen, in the middle, right after he finishes guitar solo,
yeah,
you hear one single voice, Mary Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Her voice is doubled out,
yeah,
24 times.
24 times?
And it's all because Les Paul could bounce music back and forth. It's because of him that we have all the stuff we have today. And that's why he deserves to be in early influences. Yes, man. Les Paul. Mary Ford. Rock School.
Somewhere there's music, I'll paint the tune. Somewhere there's heaven, how high in the moon. There is no moon above, love is far away too. Till it comes true.
Last break on Rock School, and we got to do it quick. Look at your TV. Hopefully they have announced it. Listen to your radio. Hopefully they have announced it. We'll see who the nominees are for the 2011 class of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We're going to finish with Robert Johnson. Why? Because it is my opinion, and it should be yours too, that there is no such thing as a rock and roll song that doesn't in some way owe its roots to the first man of blues and rock and roll, Robert Johnson.
I will wholeheartedly agree with you, brother.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
You know what?
What?
Got tamales in there red hot. Yep, I got them for sale.
You sure do.
I'm Joe Burns.
Chad P.
Class is dismissed. Bye-bye.
Got tamales in the red hot. Yeah, she got them for sale. Got tamales in the red hot. Yeah, she got them for sale. I got a good set, she long and tall. She sleeps in the kitchen.